I mean, it was a little shock for sure. We had been obviously paying attention to the latest current events and kind of all the conversations around what should be done in terms of, you know, the outbreak. And I think when we found out that there weren't any fans, it's kind of just, you know, I don't really know what to expect. Been in this league for a very long time and never had to deal with anything like this. So it'll be different. It'll be weird.
Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Wes Goldberg, Warriors writer for the Mercury News. The Warriors will play Thursday night's game against the Brooklyn Nets without any fans at Chase Center, becoming the first NBA team to play without a crowd. It's a landmark decision that could set the tone for how the rest of the league handles the coronavirus pandemic. In fact, Warriors president Rick Welts told us on Wednesday that San Francisco is the first domino to fall and that several other NBA cities could look to them as an example. After meeting with Welts Wednesday morning, San Francisco Mayor London Breed and city officials decided to cancel or postpone events of more than 1,000 people at Chase Center through March 21st. That includes Thursday's game against the Nets, and though the Warriors' next home game isn't until March 25th, this is something that could potentially affect the league for the rest of the season. In a call addressing the crisis on Wednesday, the NBA and the National Basketball Players Association agreed that the league is trending toward a period of fans not attending games at all, according to ESPN. And though, according to Welts, the subject of canceling games altogether was not brought up with him, it is something the NBA has discussed, but it's still considered a long shot. Instead, many teams could end up just playing in front of empty arenas. The Warriors are still in the process of planning how those games will be played. There'll still be a PA announcer to help explain events in the game, a stats crew and active scoreboards, media and broadcasters will still be in attendance, but as Warriors general manager Bob Myers so eloquently put it, there's no t-shirts getting shot into anywhere. Without the revenue that comes from fans attending games, the Warriors estimate that this could cost the organization, quote, tens of millions of dollars this season, the team's first in the $1.6 billion Chase Center. Meanwhile, if other organizations in other cities being affected by the coronavirus follow suit, the shortage of basketball-related income could impact next season's salary cap. To determine next steps, the NBA Board of Governors will hold a conference call Wednesday afternoon with two additional calls set for Thursday for team presidents and general managers, according to ESPN. Among those steps being discussed, per the report, includes moving games to NBA cities that have yet to be affected by the coronavirus, banning fans from games, or even suspending the league for a period of time. Whatever does happen, Thursday night's game against the Nets will be the first step in what has so far been an unprecedented crisis for the world and an unprecedented case for the NBA. In other words, Thursday night is going to be weird. Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle joins me next to talk about how this will impact fans watching games and how we as media will cover them. I'm joined now by Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. Connor, at the top of the show, I already kind of outlined everything that's going on. You and I are sitting here at Chase Center after talking with Rick Welts, Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, and this is just weird. And I guess that's sort of where I want to start with you. How weird is this? What is your takeaway from this entire situation?
I mean, it's unprecedented. The only time anything like this has happened in modern U.S. sports was 2015 when the White Sox played the Baltimore Orioles at Camden Yards in front of no fans because of all the civil unrest happening in Baltimore at that time. This is not going to be one game. This is potentially going to be the rest of the season.
Right.
And it started with the Warriors, but it looks like there's a very good chance it could extend throughout the league. You know, we leave Friday for a 5-game road trip, and we're going to Milwaukee, we're going to Toronto, Indianapolis, all these cities, and we're going to probably be in these empty arenas. It's just it's hard to wrap your mind around, but we probably could have predicted this a couple days ago.
It's going to be surreal, too, talking with some of the PR staff here. Media is going to be allowed. I mean, walking into today, like, this might have been there was a chance that this was our last time at Chase Center this season. Like, there was a non-zero chance that would have been the case, and we did talk with the PR folks, and they said, look, media is still going to be allowed. They're obviously going to be broadcasting these games on TV and radio still. So our job becomes even more important now. But, you know, we're going to be sitting in this arena now. It's just going to be us watching this basketball game that's happening. I mean, it might as well be happening in an open gym at this point. Like, it's going to be really weird for us, not only Thursday night against the Nets, but in these road games too. And potentially, I just – I don't know what else to say other than it's going to be surreal, and I don't really know how else to approach it other than the fact that as writers, you and I are going to have to do a lot of scene setting.
Yeah, and you know I love a good scene setter, so I'm kind of looking forward to it, to be honest. Obviously, not great circumstances, but I think it'll be a really interesting journalistic challenge in some ways. I'm curious just to see the logistics, and I think that tomorrow's game is going to be important just in terms of kind of setting a precedent for what they include, what they don't. What is kind of the new NBA game? Mm-hmm. What does it look like? You know, do you have the cheerleaders out there? Do you, you know,
that would
how
be weird.
How many? I mean, it's going to be on TV and stuff. Like,
I mean, and look, I don't know how cheerleader salaries work, but I mean, we're talking about already the fact that there's going to be no vendors. There's going to be all these part-time workers are not going to get their paychecks because they get paid game to game. They're essentially independent contractors who do get paid for the work that they perform. I don't know if that's the case with cheerleaders. I don't know if they're salaried or not. I have no clue.
I just randomly threw out cheerleaders as an example, but yeah.
These are the things we are learning now, right? Like things that otherwise we don't think about ever.
Right. No, there's a lot of layers to this. There's a lot of ramifications to this. And, you know, Rick Welts went out of his way today to say that he feels the worst for the part-time workers. There's 1,500 of them who work for the Chase Center. And let's be honest, a lot of these people already have tough situations. You know, some of these people are living paycheck to paycheck. Some of these people really rely on this income to make rent, to provide for their families. And they're not getting health insurance. They don't even get parking spaces here.
Right.
They're not exactly treated well to begin with. Right. And here they are, you know, having to be out money potentially for the rest of the season. That is a really major issue that I feel like the city and the Warriors need to find a solution to.
Is there anything that they can do then? Because Rick Welts, not so subtly hinted, when asked about this, like basically he was asked straight up, what are you going to do about that? Can you just pay these guys out or whatever? And he started talking about getting some help from local government, from federal government, and things like that. You know, in other words, saying like they need a bailout for this. And that seems extreme to me.
Here's the thing, though. It was a privately funded arena.
Right.
And the Warriors on it. So to me, it's a Warriors issue.
Right.
I don't understand why this would be a city issue.
No, I agree with that. Unless there is some sort of Medicaid-type situation like that is for situations like this, which I don't think that there is. And look, you already had it in the budget to plan to pay these guys. Now, I understand you're not getting that revenue at the gate, which is estimated about $4 million per game for the Warriors, which is a lot of money. That is the money you use to pay people their salaries. I'll say this, though. If you want to do the right thing, I would say just pay these guys. I don't know. I mean, it's easy for me to just throw around money that's not mine.
There's a couple ways to look at it. I mean, things in life happen, and do people deserve to get paid for work they're not doing? Like, you know, if you got laid off tomorrow, you might get a small little severance package, but then you're not getting paid anymore. And that's obviously something that's out of your control that you didn't, you know, contribute to. You got laid off for reasons beyond your performance. So, you know, it's a tough situation. I don't have a solution, but to me, that's the most important ramification from this. Steph's going to be fine. Steve Kerr's going to be fine. You know, they'll have to adjust to playing in front of no fans, but that's not the biggest deal here.
Yeah, I mean, people take these jobs as part-timers because they need the extra money, right? Yeah. That's why you do that.
I mean, they're taking time away from their families on weekends, you know. You know, it's not something most people do just for fun, you know.
Yeah.
Even though it can be enjoyable to be at a basketball game, you know, they're not watching the games. They're working. So
to shift topics really quick, back to sort of sports media and what fans can expect from us now and just in general, the stories that they're going to be reading about this stuff, there's going to be fewer media, I think, anyway. I do think with the conversations that you and I have had with people who work here, it's not going to just be anybody who wants to show up anymore. Like, this is a real a serious situation and serious enough where they want sort of familiar faces in the building. Mm-hmm. They're not going to want to start granting credentials to people who they don't know. At the same time, it's going to be a lot more nationals type of the CNNs and the MSNBCs and New York Times and these people kind of parachuting in to cover this crisis because we are in ground zero for this thing.
Yeah, Ray Ritter has he always has a hard job, but he has an especially hard job in the next couple of days figuring out who do you say yes to, who do you say no to. He basically has told us that it's going to be a situation where if you haven't been around the team at all this season, it's going to be hard for you to get a credential. If you're a major national outlet that has historically covered the playoffs every year and is at the finals and all those things, even if maybe you haven't been to a game this year, you probably have a decent chance. But there's, you know, especially tomorrow, there's going to be a lot of national interest because it's the first, not just the first NBA game, but the first major sporting event outside of that MLB game that I talked about in modern American history to play in front of no fans.
Right.
And so it's going to be a real guinea pig for not just the NBA, but March Madness. You know, the NCAA just announced that they're not going to be having fans at March Madness. It's going to be, there's going to be a lot of eyes on this game tomorrow.
Steph said it today, once the game starts, it'll just be a competition. And like, look, maybe you take Steph's word for it, but how the hell do you know? Like, he has no idea. He's never done this before. He might think that once the game starts, it's just a regular basketball game. It might not be. And for a guy like Steph, who feeds off the crowd, it probably won't be.
So the only thing that these professional athletes have experienced that's probably on par with it is when they were in college and they did those secret scrimmages that most college teams do at the beginning of their season. You know, September, October, they'll go to some random gym and not have any media and play, you know, a team from another conference. That is honestly the only thing that compares because, you know, these guys who do the pro-ams, they do the summer stuff, they do summer league, all that stuff. There are fans. There might not be a ton of fans, but there are fans.
Yes. And they are going to be now playing in front of media who don't cheer, who just literally sit there and type away on their computers. Like, the only thing they're going
to
hear is
we're not allowed to cheer, and we wouldn't cheer.
Right. I cheer for not getting coronavirus these days. That's what I cheer for. Every day that I wake up without coronavirus, I'm cheering. There's going to be broadcasters there. I mean, they are literally going to hear only the broadcast happening. It's going to be very strange for everybody involved. And then for us, I mean, we're still not going to have the access in the locker rooms. That was Tuesday night for you and I. It was the first night that happened at a game where we had no access to the locker room. We're just kind of contained in this press conference room, and they bring out the players and everything like that. And now, I mean, you and I are going to sit courtside for the game as opposed to at the top of the first the lower bowl now.
That's one silver lining.
That is the one silver lining.
You know,
we're going to hear everything. There's no fans. We will hear everything that the players are saying to each other.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to watch the actual game or pay attention to the actual game. And honestly, I have no problem with that because tomorrow's not about the actual game. It is about everything around it. I'm going to be watching interactions. I'm going to be watching facial expressions, body language, all that kind of stuff. Because tomorrow is all about how are these people handling something that's truly historic in a lot of ways.
This has been the weirdest NBA season I can ever remember. I mean, it started with the whole China debacle.
Yeah.
There's been
really weird
so many other
especially
weird things.
With the Warriors.
The Warriors are no longer the Warriors. You had the Kobe Bryant situation.
Yeah.
You've got this coronavirus situation sort of slowly infecting and getting into
the Warriors had by far their most roster turnover ever. They had a huge midseason trade, which they haven't had since they've been nationally relevant. They had major injuries to key players, obviously starting with Steph. I mean, this has been the weirdest year that I have covered them, and I have covered, you know, three finals runs, and a lot happened last season specifically with Kevin Durant and everything.
Coming off of last year makes it
only
worse.
It's just the range of things that happened. You know, last year it was all KD and all that drama with KD and Draymond. This year there's been so many different storylines.
One thing you mentioned before, that these games don't matter for the Warriors, and I think you're alluding to the fact that they do matter for a lot of the teams the Warriors are playing.
Right.
For Thursday night is against the Brooklyn Nets. They are competing for a playoff spot right now in the Eastern Conference, and they'll probably get it, but they just fired, or mutually parted ways, excuse me, with Kenny Atkinson, so they're still fighting for their playoff hopes. Then they play in Milwaukee. We'll see how that goes. If they're going to institute this ban on fans by that time, Milwaukee, they've got a pretty good lead for number one in the Eastern Conference, but they want to keep their momentum up going into it. This is a momentum shifter for the rest of the league. They also play Toronto and Indiana, both of which are playing for playoff seeding in the Eastern Conference. I mean, this is more than just the Warriors now. This is going to have ripple effects. I mean, the Warriors are the first, again, they are the first organization to not allow fans into the games. It sounds like the rest of the league could be heading in that direction really soon. And if that's the case, I mean, it's going to be incredible to see how this impacts the rest of the league. LeBron has already said he won't play if there's not any fans. Now, I don't believe
him.
He's
backtracked on that.
Yeah, he's already back. I don't believe him because I think he's understanding how real that's going to be now. And that sort of seems to be the sentiment for everybody.
Silly thing for him to say, which is not the first time that's happened.
But it does reflect how real this got. I think
just a few days ago it seemed absurd.
It seemed like an arm's distance away.
The locker room access being restricted felt like a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, that was just the first baby step. That was not a big deal in comparison to what we're going to be seeing. And I think we're going to learn a lot about the DNA of this Warriors team, about what they're kind of made of, because of what you just talked about. Where is the motivation? Where is the what's going to get them up? Because they're playing in front of empty seats. They're going against teams that have something meaningful on the line.
And they played against a mostly empty Chase Center on Tuesday night and had zero energy whatsoever.
Right.
What was admittedly a weird night for everybody, and just came out and got completely slogged by the Clippers.
What's good for the Warriors is they still have a good number of players who are trying to prove that they belong in this league, and they kind of just need to dig into that and lean on that. Lean on, you know, we're going to have eyeballs on us, especially tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, whether or not it's with the Warriors or with another team, we need to go out and play for ourselves and play for our future. I think it'd be nice to get Draymond back. We didn't get a real update today on Draymond Green.
Right.
Draymond could, I think he would take it on his shoulders of being a guy who is the emotional leader of this team and can kind of set that tone. I think I could see him doing that, even though his effort and energy have been in and out this season, given the circumstances. I think he would step up in that challenge.
Let's finish up with this question. Do you think that there's a chance that you and I get stuck in Toronto at all? How does this country-to-country hopping work these days?
I had not thought about that
until this very moment.
Probably not. I think we'll be fine. But anything can happen at this point. It really feels like we're in 28 weeks later or something like that, like an apocalyptic movie. You know, I live in Alameda, and when I commute here in the morning to Chase Center for shoot-arounds, it normally takes me over an hour. The past couple games, it's taken me literally 25 minutes, 20 minutes, because there's no one on the road. And it's like, what world am I in?
Right. It feels like that a lot. I mean, you live in a world where there are more Purell bottles than humans nowadays. This is the new universe. Thanks to Connor Letourneau. He's the Warriors beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Warriors. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. Thanks for listening.